Hey team, welcome to this edition of the Uncomfortable is Okay podcast. This is a podcast where we talk to cool people doing cool things. These people are helping to inspire us to get out of our comfort zones through their stories and their ideas. They let us know that it's okay to be uncomfortable, and actually that we get so much from these times that we do get uncomfortable. Today is lucky episode number 13. We've got another three-person conversation for you guys again today. I'm sitting down with Tim and Zoe to talk about their project 31 Days In, where it's taken them, and some of the adventures that they've had along the way. You might have seen these guys in the New Zealand media over the last couple of months. They love to travel and have come up with a really unique way to immerse themselves in the different places that they visit. Spending 31 days in a city and creating a picture of that place every day. Today we talk about searching out hidden gems, fusing things that you enjoy together, how putting yourself out there helps to build your confidence and lets you meet some amazing people. We also talk about finding something really special and unique in any situation, and that public commitment is a great way to motivate you to get things done. We have a bit of a chat through some lighthearted topics as well, especially how Vegemite doesn't really go down that well in Chile. I had a great time chatting with these two, and want to thank Tim's cousin Tom for putting me in contact with them. I'm really, really excited to see where Tim and Zoe's journey takes them. Thanks for taking the time to listen in again today, and if you enjoy the episode, make sure to share it out with your mates, or head over to iTunes and leave a rating and a comment. Welcome to the Uncomfortable is Okay podcast, guys. Today I'm sitting down with Tim and Zoe from 31 Days In. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on, Chris.
Nice.
Can you guys give our listeners a little bit of background about yourselves?
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first because my background's less interesting.
Oh,
well, I'm from Wellington, so you know, we're meeting up in Wellington and this is my hometown. So sometimes I don't feel very exotic. Zoe, on the other hand, is Australian, which maybe is not that exotic
it's
either.
It's not
but...
exotic.
But anyway, I grew up in Wellington. I've got most if not all of my family based in Wellington, and I went to primary school and secondary school here. And I also studied at Victoria, not far away. And yeah, so during university, that was when I sort of got a bit of a taste for the idea of traveling, and since then, that would have been about 10 years ago now, since then tried to incorporate traveling as much as possible into what I do, but always coming back to Wellington because this is where my family is based, and it's a big lovely family and they're lovely to be around, so I always make sure that I'm back, you know, as often as possible to hang out and be with them.
What did you study at university?
Not anything useful at all. I started off doing law and did 2 or 3 years of at Wellington Law School. Didn't sort of stick with it because it wasn't quite where I wanted to go, but it was certainly interesting. And then I focused on English literature, and then publishing. So and primarily book publishing and some online publishing stuff. Yeah, which was really interesting, actually. Yeah. What about you, Zoe?
I'm from Australia. Yes, Tim has already bigged up a little bit. I'm from Western Australia, which is probably one of the least interesting parts of Australia. It's really hot and dry and big and vast and not very... Well, for me, it's not very fun. I think you liked it a little bit more. And all my family are from Western Australia, and they've never really left, really. My dad's never been on a plane or anything, so they're very sort of over there and isolated in their little way. My mum owns a wheat farm in Western Australia, which is pretty... great. For my mum.
No, it's cool. It's a really, really cool place.
Yeah.
I've had the luck of spending some time there, and it's nothing, you know, like the landscape is as alien to New Zealand as any other part of the world, even though, you know, Australia is your nearest neighbour and all that. It is actually like another planet in some ways. So yeah, that area, like the wheat belt, so dry and like, you know, really deep red dirt. And just like completely different sky, different colours, everything's quite different. So
we have a lot of dust storms where you just have to shut up all your windows because there's like a whole cloud of dust that's just about to sweep through your house. And if you don't, you'll have like dust everywhere. Mm. It's really different.
And then if it rains, like it's ridiculously hot. So you're talking like late 30s, early 40 degrees.
Mm.
But then when it rains, which is hardly ever, the next day there'll be this massive swarm of like insects which have propagated during that one day of heavy rain. And then because you're the only house in the middle of nowhere, you've got your lights on, and suddenly the house is covered in these tiny, I don't even know what the insects were called, but they were starting to like crawl in through every single crack of the house.
They're really gross.
And just like swarmed all over, all because there was just like one brief hour or two of rainfall. Yeah, it was quite insane. Nothing like that in New Zealand at all.
It'd be ridiculously interesting to study if you were into
bugs. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We weren't into bugs.
No, we're not into bugs.
Get out of our lives.
Yeah.
I think Australia is really underrated for biodiversity because you sort of think of it as this really large wasteland in a way, but it's really not. Like, especially Western Australia, like geologically and also biodiversity wise, it's actually probably like one of the richest in the entire world. So there's tons of that sort of interesting stuff that I really didn't expect before going over there.
Yeah.
It's an interesting place. So yeah, that's why I picked it up.
Yeah.
Cool. Whereabouts did you guys meet?
We met in Santiago in Chile. How long ago now? Long time ago now.
Probably about 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years ago now. Tim was working as an English teacher and he sort of frequented this hostel, which was a little bit quite cool, and like there was nice guys running it. And when I was doing children's theatre, and so it was through my university, and me and five Australians arrived. And we actually, because there had been a group of Australians before us, and so one of the people had made friends with Tim, and they gave us a package of food to take to Tim. And so we kind of knew about him, and we had this big box of food.
Full of like Vegemite.
Yeah.
And what else? Like pineapple lumps maybe or something.
No, not pineapple lumps.
Oh, no.
Ginger nuts or something.
Yeah.
Something homely.
Which we foolishly actually gave to the guys who were running the hostel, thinking that they would like kindly pass it on to Tim, but they didn't. All they left was Vegemite because they didn't want to eat it.
It was like a small little chunk taken out where someone had tasted it and obviously been like, what the hell is this?
It's just full of regret.
Yeah. I think if you're not New Zealand or not a Kiwi or an Australian, then Vegemite just isn't for you.
Yeah, it's a bit of a battle, eh? My mind of Vegemite, but
we're
through and through Vegemite.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how we met. And obviously being like in a different place, we had a shared love for travelling and for being in new and exciting places. So I guess that was sort of fundamental to us getting on.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so talking about what you're doing at the moment, how did the idea for 31 Days In come about?
It sort of came about mostly from being bored, because we spend a lot of time, because we're quite cheap, we like to travel on buses and sort of things that take a long time. So we would always play sort of strange games which would involve like either drawing or finding words or doing something like that. And then we sort of played around with the idea of doing more of sort of drawing stuff. And I'm quite keen on photography and Tim is quite keen on drawing things. So we thought of a way that we could sort of fuse what we do with traveling and going to lots and lots of places. And we're quite homebodies, we're quite lazy, so we like to stay in one place for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I don't understand how people can, you know, jump from one city to another, you know, like every day changing location. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
Hard enough just getting one, you know, one bus to take you from one place to another. So we try to make sure that we're in one place for a decent amount of time.
We just thought like, why don't we try drawing a picture a day and seeing what people think?
Mm. So 31 days is a pretty good amount of time. It was kind of arbitrary really coming up with that concept.
Mm.
And we're sort of just falling into it a little bit. But essentially it was, how long do you think it would take to really get to know a place? So obviously 31 days is not really enough to ever get to know a place, but we think it's a good amount of time.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in one city. So, you know, Wellington, if you had 31 days in Wellington, for instance, you know, what would you do? What would you see? Where would you go? What events are there on?
Mm.
Things like that. And that's basically the concept. Like if you were able to travel indefinitely with no financial restrictions, which is not the case at all. That's nobody's reality. but let's pretend that you could. You know, where would you like to go? And so we'd like to see sort of how long we can keep doing that, basically.
Brilliant. So can you let us know where you've been so far? Mm.
Where have we been?
We've been to Barcelona, and we've been to Western Australia and to Wellington.
Yeah, so we've travelled quite a bit, but those are the three places that we've tried this project in. So when we were in Barcelona, that was when we sort of thought
that, was the first one.
That it would be really cool to give it a go. And Barcelona was a great place to try it and see if it worked, because it's such a popular city. And I don't know, at any given time, apparently there's about 1 million tourists in that city.
It's pretty ridiculous.
It's a ridiculous sort of number of people, but you can see why, because it's absolutely stunning and there's tons of activities. And we were there in like the heart of summer during August last year.
It was really good.
So it was a perfect time to be there. Basically, it was just sort of festivities all the time, like in parts of the city. The little neighbourhoods had set up sort of street festivals, and they decorated streets. So there were different themes going through it. Like there was a Godzilla theme in one street, and then you have a Japanese garden theme with lanterns and then other things. And
there was a King Kong.
There was a King Kong.
Yeah.
There was just basically just people were really happy to be in the middle of summer, and it was a really good time to be there, actually. Barcelona in August.
Would have given you a lot of material to work with.
Mm.
Yeah, already on top of what already is there in Barcelona.
Mm. Exactly, yeah. Even if there's nothing, you know, no events going on, there's tons to see in Barcelona. Yeah. So that was really cool. Heaps of stuff going on, live music and all of those sorts of things. So yeah, it was pretty hot. We went through it. Actually, one of the big things about being there in August was that everyone locally sort of gets the hell out.
Yeah.
So we were amongst like a lot of foreigners. Which was amazing, and it was a real sort of like a festive time. But practically, like in terms of doing practical logistical things, it was actually in some ways a bit of a nightmare because all the businesses closed down. So at one point in the month of August, there was only one professional printer that was open. And what we do relies quite heavily on you know, having daily access to high quality print technology and print production, basically.
Scanning.
Scanning is essential so that we can get a really high quality scan, get it up online, and get that day's painting up online onto the websites. And if, you know, if nothing's open because everyone's gone to the beach for a month, which is what everyone does over July and August.
That's what you want
to
do.
It was actually pretty hectic. I remember like walking around town to all these different printers that were closed, and then frantically running, like sweating. And then taking like all these metro trains to get to a place before it would close, and that was actually the drama that I had to go through.
Stressful times.
It was pretty stressful. So yeah.
So there was only one open in the whole city.
There was at one point in August there was one open in the whole city. Yeah, and I think the reason they were open is because they I think they had a couple of foreigners working there who sort of understood that it's not normal for an entire business to close for 2 months. But otherwise the Spanish way, you know, like the Spanish lifestyle.
Just an extended siesta.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they deserve it. I mean, you know, like, to take a month off over August when it's really hot and go to the beach, I mean, that's amazing. I think that's so a tradition that you should keep.
Yeah.
I don't think that we should try and impose any of this New Zealand, Australian, American work ethic where it's like, no, you can never close your shop. I think it's something to treasure and hold on to, something uniquely Spanish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it took you a while to find the guys that would help you out
on this one? Yeah, exactly. But once we got there, it was good. Yeah,
it was by good sushi as well. So,
oh, excellent! Yeah,
that didn't
yeah, you
down.
Got your printer and you got your sushi.
Which the Spanish do good sushi.
They weren't Spanish.
Yeah, okay. we don't know.
I won't answer that question, but they weren't
Spanish. Yeah. Okay. So you go to a place. You're drawing, you're taking pictures for 31 days, and then what happens? How do you promote that? How do you get that out to people?
Yeah, so we basically think the name, I mean, 31 days in Barcelona, 31 days in Western Australia, 31 days in Wellington, basically sums up the whole project. We feel like it's quite an accessible idea. So we started off sort of on the concept of simplicity and accessibility, really.
Yeah, relatable.
It's completely relatable. So starting from that very simple sort of foundation, we've found it quite straightforward, eh? So Zoe is very good at sort of overseeing social media and things. She has a really good understanding of that. She's a photographer, and she takes some great shots, which you know, capture moments and things in which people really respond to through sites like Instagram or Facebook and things. So she already had that knowledge and experience of using social media. And as a result of that, we haven't actually had to have our own website.
No, so she's really lucky.
It is really lucky, yeah. So
we
basically
know anything about having our own website.
Yeah. So we basically upload to existing high traffic social media sites.
Yeah.
And it's worked out really well so far. Because the problem with having your own site is how do people find it? How are people ever going to find your website, you know? And you can just end up existing in this tiny unknown corner of the internet that people don't know. But we've been lucky to have had, you know, good responses through Facebook and Instagram. And
especially through Instagram. There's so many people already uploading stuff to do with cities and their own perspective on it. And we enjoy seeing what they upload and what they go to and what they do. But in turn, they also really connect with us, and you know, we've built like actual relationships with some of our followers who like comment and always like and stuff. There's one called Spotty Dogs,
yeah,
who
is our favorite Spotty Dogs. Yeah.
They'll take the picture and they'll recreate it in emojis,
yeah,
oh, awesome. And they're amazing. We've actually sent them a free print. They've got these gorgeous dogs called is it Isla and Rose?
Yeah, Isla and Rose, I
think.
Yeah.
We love them.
Yeah, it's funny building up little relationships with people you probably will never meet.
Yeah, but it's nice. Without those sites and without that kind of stuff, we wouldn't be able to make those connections, and it's really nice.
Mm.
It must be interesting looking at it as well. A lot of these people are looking at their cities from a local point of view.
Yes.
And you guys are looking at them, obviously, from a visitor point of view, but probably, as you said, more than just a typical visitor for a couple of days, that you're actually immersing yourself there for a few months, so you have a different insight from them and also a different insight from your typical tourist as well.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's really nice. We think it's really important to not just stay as well for the 31 days. We try to stay a few days either side, and because then you really get to know a place and you make connections.
Arriving early and sort of laying the groundwork and making and starting to build those relationships with local people so that when the month does start, you have both your perspective as a foreigner, like you're saying, and but you also get this really cool insight through like the locals and things, having relationships with local people, and celebrating like the really cool things that are special to people who actually live there, you know, their whole lives, or the hidden stuff, not the very obvious things, you know, not just like the beehive if you're in Wellington, you know, like the hidden things. So for instance, taking that example, instead of drawing the beehive, we did want to include some sort of acknowledgement of, you know, political life, because Wellington, you know, being the political capital of New Zealand. So coincidentally, we were here during the flag referendum.
Okay.
So that was a way for us to acknowledge that, you know, we're in the capital city of New Zealand. It is a political place. A lot of people work in government. And just at this moment in time, there's this incredibly strange flag referendum, which is a bizarre little piece of New Zealand political history, a complete like washout and failure. but we wanted to capture that, so that was one of our pictures, basically.
We did them as tea towels.
Yeah, we did them as tea towels, because that was the political commentary. So, I mean, being Zoe's Australian, I'm New Zealander, so we can sort of have that insight. But that's what we want to sort of achieve. Like, so, like, just like you said, basically, you have a outsider perspective, but if you are there long enough and if you start to make relationships with people and really, really get to know the people that live there and stuff, then hopefully you get a good insight into actually, you know, how people tick in that place.
Yeah, and I think actually building those relationships with locals gives you far more insight than just going and having a wander around or reading a guidebook or listening to the media.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really nice. It's also like an unusual way to make friends, we've found.
Yeah. Who have your friends been?
Alice from the Rocks.
Yeah. We've made some really good friends, actually.
Jesse's from Towers. The band is really nice. Who else? Everyone's been really nice to us, which is like really good. We haven't really had too many negative experiences, if any, really. It's nice.
Yeah, it's cool. And I think that's something I've found with the podcast as well, is that if you just actually ask people, hey, do you want to do this or do you want to be involved in this? The vast majority of people say yes, or in some cases don't get back to you because they're slackers.
Yeah.
As we were talking about my brother's band before.
So, shout out to your brother's
Newtown
band.
So Newtown Rocksteady, if you're listening, you should have got back to these guys.
No, they're very busy.
Yeah, they're very busy. They make great music, and we would have loved to have included them.
But we would love to include them in a future iteration of this project.
Yes.
Okay. Get in touch with me next time you're you want to do something, and I'll see if I can grease the wheels for you. All right,
very
good.
Yeah, I've got contacts now.
So I know that you guys have just finished an exhibition in Wellington. Did you do one in Barcelona as well, and in Western Australia?
We did in Western Australia. We did it in quite an unusual spot. It was actually a soup kitchen run by a bunch of sort of very young artistic types in Fremantle, which is sort of like, I guess, kind of like, is it like Newtown?
Yeah, there's some similarities actually. Yeah. Wellington and Fremantle have a lot of similarities. And yeah, it's sort of that sort of edgy sort of diverse Newtown sort of aspect that's definitely comparable.
Yeah, it's sadly, I don't think it's running anymore, but it was run by this lovely girl called Ellen, who is sort of this really like eccentric, sort of lovely, very ambitious, and also very young. And she ran the whole thing, I think, on a very minimal budget, but she made it work. And it was a really nice, unique place where not only locals could come, but also the, like, homeless people, they would get, you know, a free meal.
Yeah,
they did.
So, yeah, it was called Hot Soup, and that sort of says everything, really.
Yeah.
Come and get some hot soup and get a toasty, and it was just a nice place to be, but quite like in an eclectic way, you know? Yeah. Like,
it was very,
very welcoming.
Relaxed.
Very relaxed. So it wasn't, you know, an official gallery space or art space. And we've found that actually if you do want to go through those, you know, those actual spaces which are primarily or solely art galleries, you have to do so very, very far in advance.
Yeah, like, I contacted one gallery and they said they would book 9 years in advance.
Nine years.
Which is like 9 years. So, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do like next week.
Yeah.
But...
but they're obviously doing very well. And so, yeah, that's been a lesson for us, is plan ahead. But what we do like about the spontaneity of this, you know, you turn up somewhere and you make these connections and contacts. The beauty of that is that you meet some really interesting people who are doing really interesting, crazy, slightly off-the-wall things. And that's how you get, yeah, like, for instance, with Hot Soup and Fremantle, that was a really unusual little venue, you know. We weren't even really sure what it was, but it had a bit of everything, including wall space where we... at the close of the month, we hung up all of our 31 paintings of Western Australia. So it was a really good little space and some really interesting people. And then going forward, we knew that from that moment onwards, it would be kind of like a template. So we'd do a painting a day, put it up online, and then at the close of the month have a big party just to celebrate with a launch in some sort of a gallery, or at least a space which would work as a gallery. And it's worked here as well. We were lucky to exhibit in Matchbox on Cuba Street, which was a perfect location. Really accessible. Lots of people could make it along.
More than we expected.
Way more than expected. So we didn't do that in Barcelona because we just didn't know whether, you know, it would be a viable project and whether people would even respond.
Yeah.
We thought maybe these drawings would just disappear into obscurity.
We were a bit nervous then, but then we built up our confidence.
Yeah. And so now going forward, we're getting a bit more and more confident, eh?
Yeah.
Gonna be, get more a bit more ambitious.
Yeah. How have you built that confidence up?
I guess just through realizing that people actually kind of like it.
Yeah.
And just being like, okay, well, if people like it, what can we do with it next, and where can we take it, and sort of seeing how that goes, and just sort of pushing ourselves to just keep doing and finding new ways to also keep it interesting for us, because if it's the same every time, it'll sort of lose its charm, we think. And not only that, but the bigger the following we get, we want to keep it fresh for everybody who's sort of involved and following along and who likes the project, just so it's not, you know, the same sort of format every time. We want to try and keep it different.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And I think this time we have, to get our confidence up and answer the question, basically we have sort of proof that it's, you know, something of substance now. It's an actual thing. It's an actual project, eh?
Yeah.
So, and people are buying the artwork, and that's, you know, first and foremost, that's a real surprise for us, because, you know, there are paintings and artwork and stuff, and we didn't think that anyone would really care, but they do, and people seem to really like them. And so we're really flattered and honored that people want to buy one and put it on their wall. Like, it's always a surprise for us every time a new sale is made. It is always like a real thrill. Like, it's a real surprise for us that people want this. And so we're slowly building a bit of confidence and realizing that actually, you know, what we're doing could be something of high quality, and so we'll try and keep that up as we go forward. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a challenge with putting anything new out there, that that uncertainty around, hey, is anyone going to actually look at this or listen to this or actually be interested in it? Yeah. And sometimes you actually just have to just go for it, dip your toes in the water and see what happens. And if you get a good response, then you get a good response. Or if you don't, then you actually just go back to the drawing board.
That's right,
try,
yeah.
Try something
new. Don't give up, eh? It's about trying different things that are new. Some things will work, some won't.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've talked to a few people, and sometimes, obviously, the projects that you're involved in are quite personal to you as well. And sometimes you have to kind of take that out of the equation when you're trying new things and not take it personally if something does go wrong.
Mm. Yeah, because it's always going to happen. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. How have people close to you reacted when you told them that you're going to do this?
Pretty well. My nana is really into it. She's probably one of our biggest fans.
Shout out to Gloria.
Yeah. She housed us for 31 days in Western Australia.
Yeah.
She let her entire house become sort of like this mess heap of all of our stuff. But they've actually been quite nice, like generally quite supportive.
Yeah, I'd say. Very. Yeah, we were really, really lucky, really privileged actually to get to stay with Gloria. And then we had also support from Zoe's mum and dad. And all of the extended family. So yeah, we were probably a huge shambles to them. We ended up with like all of our, you know, our stuff, like all of the canvases and the paintings and the frames and everything all just lying around.
Yeah, we had to go to my dad like quite late at night after he'd been at work all day to like construct a frame to take to a mum and do a thing.
Yeah, he was super cool about it. He was he expertly put together this really high quality display frame which we then used at various markets.
He was so casual about it, though.
He was super
like
casual,
a beer, and he was just, like, exhausted.
Yeah, no, that was really cool. So we've been really fortunate for that. So far in Western Australia and Wellington, you know, we've had that family support, and that's been really the fundamental reason why we've been able to do it. So in Wellington, it's been my family. And, yeah, we really couldn't do it without that support network. So going forward, I guess, considering that, if we were going to be going to places where, you know, we don't have that family set up, that's certainly something that that's a bit of an unknown, you know? That's going to be a big challenge. And I guess that's going to be, you know, a comfort factor. How comfortable are we going to be? Yeah.
So looking for kind of that support network and that help when you get to a place.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
It's going
to be a bit different.
We've been really lucky, just really basic things, you know, like setting up the exhibition. We've been fortunate to have the use of a car, which my parents have lent us to use. How are we going to be able to, you know, cart 31 large framed pieces of artwork to an exhibition? You know, how are we going to be able to do that without the sort of, you know, just the very basic idea of having a vehicle? I mean, it's so simple, but that's really everything, actually, those small minor details. So, yeah.
And communicating as well, being places where we don't speak the language is going to be a new experience.
Yeah, the language barrier. It's also really fun.
Yeah, it will be fun, but also tricky.
Yeah, it's tricky, but it's really cool to check yourself in it, have a challenge. Yeah, so far, you know, Western Australia and Wellington being English-speaking places, we've been absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But it's going to be cool to think about, you know, all these other exotic places where you throw in the language barrier and cultural barriers and things.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it's probably, they've been quite nice places to test the concept and refine it a little bit before you actually just dive headfirst into it without as much support and, just using the phrase book.
Yeah.
Or Google Translate, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be tricky.
Yeah, thank God for the smartphone.
Yeah. So do you guys have plans for where you're going to go next with it?
What are we thinking? We're certainly always planning.
Yeah, we've got sort of like dream lists of where we'd like to go, like Helsinki and Cuba and all sorts of different places, even to get back to South America and Chile. And
yeah, because we did travel quite widely through South America, but that was before we, you know, that was when the idea was germinating, but it wasn't a real thing.
Mm.
So yeah, we'll have to get back to South America because that's quite a special place for us.
Yeah, but probably we'll go back to Europe, I think. It's quite easy to do Europe and to sort of set yourself up.
Yeah.
And
We've also noticed just in terms of numbers, like in how people respond to things. You know, Wellington's a really small place, and even though Western Australia is a massive state, it still is kind of still has that small town feel as well. But Barcelona really got off to like a flyer just because of the just sheer number of people that are there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we think that maybe with these European cities, you know, which are like known all over the world, people are fascinated by places like Paris and other major European places. It might be quite cool to sort of focus on them. And you know, because people have been there so often, you have such a large number of people going through, we think that it should get a good response.
Yeah.
So that's what we might do. But of course, we want to balance that with like the more obscure places. I mean, we'd love to get to the Pacific Islands.
Yeah.
And definitely. Get around those, which would raise its own issues of, you know, like its own logistical issues. Yeah. I mean, how many printers are going to be open, you know, during the week or whatever in Fiji or somewhere.
Sounds like amazing anyway.
It sounds amazing. I think it's kind of, they will be the most memorable sort of moments of those days when everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
We've been quite lucky. We haven't actually had a day where we've missed uploading.
No, we've never missed one.
Okay.
Which is impressive for us, I feel like.
It is impressive for us, yeah. It's taken planning. We're not strong on the planning side of things. We don't really plan ahead very far in advance. But so far we've been lucky.
Yeah.
How have you got around that struggle with planning?
Well, it's sort of once you commit to it, once you publicly announce we're going to do a drawing a day for 31 days, it's sort of like really embarrassing if you don't.
Yeah, you kind of have to stick with it for your own integrity and the integrity.
That sort of pushes us quite a bit, because we don't want to be those people who are like, oh, I'm going to do this every day for X amount of time, and then just like day three fail.
Yeah, so you've kind of put it out there to everybody to let them know. Have a bit of accountability.
Yeah, which, you know, it's not in other aspects of our life. For instance, we failed Junk Food June.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but we didn't publicly go online and say that we were going to do it.
No, so just for those listening, the podcast won't come out for a little bit. It's now the 16th of June. So when did you guys fail? Like recently? You made it halfway through?
I failed on the morning of day one.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't even think I really tried that hard. I think it would have been
I don't
like,
think you ever really committed.
No, not mentally.
Like, a few people that we know are doing it.
Yeah.
And so to be supportive.
We're like, oh, yeah, we'll do it.
Are we actually supportive of it? I don't think we are.
Nah.
It's not like we sit down with a box of Tim Tams.
Yeah. Have you told them that you have failed yet? Or are you just kind of...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay. They're well and truly aware of
that's
that.
That's right.
I don't want to have to pretend like I'm not eating junk food all the time.
Sweet. Because I was just going to say this is going to come out in July, so you're probably all right, actually.
Yeah.
they won't know until afterwards.
They won't know.
Surprise.
but yeah. If you compare that to the project when we say we're going to do it, we really want to do it. Yeah, accountability is a big thing.
Have you had some times where you've come close to missing it?
What's our closest shave, do you reckon?
I uploaded a song really late at night at like 10:30, I think it was. Because the way that we did it was quite, we wanted to space them out. So, and we also didn't really like have an idea, because each day we don't always know exactly what the picture might be.
Yeah.
And sort of plan sort of day to day. And so then if you don't have a picture, then we don't really think about what song, what would go with the picture until that day that it happened. And then we'd go, this is what we've got. These are the songs that we've got. Which ones go together quite nicely.
So, it's true, there were a lot of late nights.
Yeah. Which is fine. Like,
scrambling.
That's just the nature of the project. But it was sort of like trying to make sure everything went up on time. So we got kind of a little bit late with the songs, which actually worked out because lots of people who are not in Wellington necessarily, but overseas, are awake during that time. So
yeah, it's quite cool seeing that people, once we've left Barcelona and we've left Western Australia, people are still sticking around to see what's next. And that's really, really cool.
That's awesome.
It's really nice, yeah. Kind of expect that people might lose interest because it's not their town anymore, but that's not the case at all.
Some probably have.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely some have.
But surprising the amount who haven't.
Yeah, so we really appreciate that. It's awesome.
Cool. Still invested in your journey.
Yeah.
So is this project funding all your travels, or are you guys having to work as well?
Oh, we wish.
Yeah. I mean, ideally one day we would love the project to be self-funding, to, you know, that it was viable and that we could do this full time. I mean, that would be unbelievable, but we're nowhere near that yet. So,
but we're lucky enough to have already been in a position where we travel all the time, and part of that funding that has always been a part of what we do. So it's just sort of another thing that goes along with our travelling experience. So we're not really dependent on it for any income, and it's not sort of, we're not too worried about it.
Exactly, and that's why we've we made the decision in Wellington, because we have full-time jobs. We decided that we would donate the proceeds from this project. So all of the money that was made through the CD and through downloads online of the music. And then after all of our costs and stuff are covered, because, you know, it's quite cost-intensive producing artwork and things, you know, the actual physical materials that we use. But then after costs are covered and things, we've been really lucky to be able to donate what we think is hopefully a really good amount to Kibosh. So we just did that last week, actually. We just hosted
awesome.
And it was really cool. So we managed to raise $2,580.
That's it. Yeah.
Oh, and congratulations.
Yeah, we're really happy with that. It's really cool. So it's sort of separate to what we do in our lives for work at this point. Whether it stays that way, I mean, we'd love to do it full time, but at the moment it's quite cool having them sort of divided, having this as a separate project, and then we can give something back to the places that we go to as well. Like, it's been really an honour to be able to give some money to Kibosh.
It's been cool.
And I actually think, to be honest, really at the crux of it is that that's half the reason or more that people have responded really well. So, you know, you can do paintings and you can release songs and stuff and people will be like, oh, that's nice. But when people see that you have linked up with an organisation like Kibosh and that you believe in what they're doing and that you want to help out and give money and stuff, people, immediately people have responded to that, I think.
Yeah.
So we've been really lucky because, you know, we don't want to be people who go, oh, look, we donated money. That's not the case at all. Like, we've been really lucky to meet these people doing really cool things, you know. And as a result of that, we've met all these other people who wouldn't have heard of the project otherwise.
Yeah.
One of the guys who works at Kibosh, Martin Andrews, for instance, has donated a song. He contributed a song to the CD.
Yeah.
This beautiful little ukulele number. And we would never have met him or heard of, you know, that song unless we had, you know, met the people at Kibosh. And then it sort of just was like dominoes from there. We met all these really cool people who were there more of, to be involved with like a community project more than the art or music itself, like,
which is nice.
Yeah,
because it really is about community.
Then. Yeah, exactly.
And what makes a community and who lives in it and sort of stuff like that.
Exactly, and like you said before, you know, you can go to a place and you can take photos of the main icons in a city and say you've been there, but it's not until you really sort of immerse yourself a little bit in the community that you get to really see how a place operates, and that's the most rewarding thing, for us.
Yeah.
Mm.
You've obviously been to some quite different places through this journey. Has the, what similarities in the communities have you noticed?
That's an interesting question. I don't really know. I think with the exhibition, we met sort of quite similar people. The girls who ran Matchbox are so, so, so lovely. And they were quite similar to the people who ran Hot Soup. So there's always sort of that sort of nice sort of...
Yeah, they were all artists themselves.
Yeah.
And they were, basically doing what they love. And at the same time, running this little gallery art space.
Yeah, and helping other people to do what they love and to be able to bring that out in the community. So that was really nice.
Yeah. But, and I mean, yeah, certainly there are similarities, but actually there are big differences too. And so that's what I think we'll focus on. So like in Wellington, music is a huge part of being in Wellington. I mean, it seems like everyone's in a band or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we come in and we chat to you and you know all these people who have been involved, Newtown Rock City and Fraser Ross and your brother, and everyone is, you know, a musician basically. And so we thought that that was a perfect way to meet people and celebrate Wellington. That's not going to be the case in other cities, so it's about finding like what's something really special and unique to the next place that we go to. It could be music again, but it probably won't be,
not for a while at least.
So there'll be similarities, but we also want to like sort of celebrate the differences and what's unique to each place. So we won't be repeating the music project for a little while. It worked really well here, because of the type of city Wellington is. Yeah, but I'm really excited to see what sort of subcultures exist in other places. You know, like what do people do? Like, I mean, do people play ping pong obsessively in some places?
We do sometimes.
We do. Or do, you know, it could be something really weird. And so, yeah, alongside the paintings, we're always looking for something which is really unique to that place. And looking forward to seeing what that will be in the next one, eh?
Awesome. That sounds cool. Sorry, that was just a bit of a random question that popped into into the mind while you were talking about community.
No, it's a good one. It's an interesting one. I hadn't thought about that before.
No, neither did I.
Now, your cousin Tom told me to ask you about the story when you were travelling through the South Island and you ran out of money. And then what happened there?
I wasn't travelling with Tom, was I?
I don't know. He didn't tell me that part.
Oh yeah, hi Tom, by the way. Big shout out to you and your family over in Adelaide.
Yeah.
If you're listening, then hey. I'm trying to remember what story this is. I wonder how old I was. Oh yeah, actually, he's probably referring to when I decided that I was going to go and work on a vineyard, maybe. So, as I said before, I started studying law and then I did English. And then once I wrapped that one up, it was sort of like the itchy feet sort of thing, but I didn't have any money. And anyone who studies English literature probably won't have any money ever. But a great degree, guys.
Yeah.
For everyone out there with one. But anyway, basically, there was no option to travel internationally, so I went down to the South Island and got a job in sort of the Melbourne area on a vineyard. And I think it was probably less a case of running out of money as opposed to never having any money at all. But as a result of working there, I got to meet some really, really crazy people. I met this musician guy from the UK, and he was traveling with his German girlfriend, and then a guy from Cheviot as well. Dan from Cheviot, I'd never even heard of a town called Cheviot, but as a result of meeting these cool people, we got to travel around the South Island a bit, got to Christchurch before any of the the earthquake stuff happened, and saw Christchurch in its pre-earthquake state, which it's really, really different to how it is now. And then down to Cheviot, and then around the whole bunch of the South Island, and then also did a bit of apple picking and things. I definitely ran out of money. I'm not sure how much Tom actually knows about that. But I was sort of existing by the skin of my teeth. Is that what they call it?
Skin of my
teeth. So that was a struggle financially, but it was amazing in terms of meeting cool people, and that sort of fed my desire to travel more widely. It was awesome. It was a really cool experience.
Yeah, it probably is the same time, but he narrated that actually you were in a hostel one time and had no money. Uh-huh. So you ended up drawing a picture of the hostel.
Yeah, actually, that is absolutely true. Actually, at that same hostel, so there was the time when I used a picture to pay for accommodation. But luckily, one morning I woke up and everyone was like itching. This was I'd already used up my credit from the picture, and so I was back to $0 again. But everyone was itching, and people were covered in flea bites.
Ugh.
And everyone was getting really mad because, when you pay for accommodation, you don't expect to be bitten by fleas. And so the staff had decided that they would, pay people for, they would be able to give people a free night or two or three or whatever, depending on the situation. I paid for, I think, about a week or two accommodation with a picture of the hostel. Which I won't name because of the fleas. And then when that dried up, I basically just scratched my skin as hard as I could until it appeared red and raw, and then lined up with the rest of the poor flea-bitten people and said, "Hey guys, look what you've done to me. I demand free accommodation for the next, 5 nights." And then that worked. And then I can't remember what I did after that.
Did you actually have the fleas?
No, I don't think I did, yeah. Don't think they were in a position to argue though.
You got twice as lucky, no fleas and free nights.
No fleas and free nights, yeah. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Well, Tom has a much better memory than me.
Brilliant. Changing tact a little bit to you guys, can you tell me about a time that you've failed and what you learned from it?
What's the time that we've failed?
I don't know, you've started really well.
I know.
It doesn't have to be in this project. It can be any other time.
I can only think of one story, and it was...
What is it?
It's the one about the boat.
Oh, yeah, the boat story.
Tim specifically told me not to tell the boat story, because it's not actually very funny, but I tell it all the time.
Well, we still feel really bad about this.
Yeah, we also still feel really bad.
I think you should tell it.
Basically, okay. We sunk a boat. Kind of. Yeah.
Not our boat.
Not our boat. Not entirely our fault, but we were responsible for the boat.
We were responsible at the time for the boat. We were house sitting on the river Tigre in Argentina.
Yeah.
And it's near, like, Buenos Aires. It's a really nice area, actually. The river is really, really cool. And I think there's actually a Viggo Mortensen film.
Yeah, there
strangely
is.
He speaks Spanish like a local Argentine guy, which we didn't know until that movie. But anyway, it's a beautiful little river.
It's gorgeous. And it was quite isolated, so basically you couldn't get anywhere unless you were on a boat.
Hmm.
And so we caught like a boat taxi, and then the owners who had left to go to Europe had tied up their boat to their little jetty. And basically what had happened was that the owner, lovely guy, didn't tie the boat in quite the right way. So basically when other boats came past, instead of the boat moving with the water, it stayed still, which meant loads of water went in it.
Yeah.
And we're not boat experts at all, so we had no idea.
We had no idea that I was pushing it, and that's the part that I feel really bad about. So basically the failure was on our part to avoid that boat sinking, which we could have done. We were warned by the neighbour that it was happening, and we did notice that the boat was, it was covered, so you couldn't see how much water was getting in it. But we did notice that it was sitting very low in the water.
Well, we didn't know until she mentioned it.
Yeah.
We didn't really look at the boat that much.
But then we didn't know quite what to do. The evening came and went.
We also went into Buenos Aires that day.
We had to go into Buenos Aires on another boat, not on that boat.
couldn't use that
for boat. The night. And when we returned the next day, the rope was visible and the boat was not. So, massive failure.
Didn't you get up in the middle of the night and feel it, like...
Yeah, I felt
basically
it.
Basically, like, it's soul leave the earth.
I felt it in my bones. Yeah, I felt the boat's soul leave the earth, yeah.
But we kind of got... We didn't really know, but there was the neighbour, Tati, who owned a little shop. And one day she came out and she was saying, in Spanish, because she didn't speak English, she was saying, like, la lancha, la lancha. And I thought she was talking about lunch.
Yeah, Zoe thought she was just inviting her for lunch.
I was like, this is so nice. She wasn't. She was saying that there was water filling the boat. Mm. Sadly, Tim is the Spanish speaker in the relationship and he wasn't there. So her message got missed and the boat is no longer with us.
Yeah. So yeah, there was a big rescue operation. Some of the nice neighbours came and they winched it out. We looked like complete, like, foreign idiots. And the owners were very disappointed.
Yeah.
And I still feel bad about it today, which is why, I mean, it's definitely a failure story.
Mm. What's your takeaway?
Yeah, what's our takeaway from this?
What would you do differently next time?
Don't house sit places with boats.
That's sage.
Solid advice.
I think that's sage advice for the listeners.
Yeah.
So what was the last uncomfortable thing that you guys did?
What's the last uncomfortable thing that we did? You can take this one.
Oh, because you answered with the boat.
I answered the boat.
The last uncomfortable. Well, I mean, this project that we've, you know, just completed had its moments. I mean, we were up until very early hours, a bit sleep deprived, but it was all completely worth it. But outside of the project, uncomfortable. I guess because we've travelled to places which, you know, are not exactly the safest places to be and things. That's always been interesting. For instance, Zoe mentioned that we used to, like, you know, do little drawings while we were waiting for buses or whatever. Well, one of the times that we were waiting for a bus, we were in a border town called Chuy.
Oh yeah, Chuy.
Which is a really unusual place. It's between Brazil and Argentina, and it's like a, I don't know if it's like a
Uruguay.
What do you call it? Like a, not like a duty free zone, but like a, no, maybe like tax,
like a,
doesn't apply.
Yeah, like a duty free zone.
It's like a tax free
exactly
zone, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So basically, it's where just thousands of people converge to flog off incredibly cheap goods. So you can buy anything at like a fraction of the cost that you would buy somewhere else. So you got some pretty seedy sorts, you know, like selling things which are probably not legit and stuff, but...
And some gypsies trying to, like, grab your hand and tell you your fortune. Like,
can't say gypsies.
Why? No, what's the word? It's gypsies.
I think gypsies are still politically correct.
Is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah,
okay, okay.
I'm fine.
All right. You are Australian, though.
Yeah.
Different vocabulary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different sorts.
All right. So, yeah, there were some interesting people, and we were waiting for a bus that had started much, much further south. Maybe it had started, like, in the Argentinian capital, and it was coming up. and you know how bus timetables go, they never stick to time.
Yeah.
So we expected to get it at, I don't know, 11 p.m. It didn't come till like 4 in the morning. So we were in this dodgy-ass town.
We were just standing there with our backpacks on. At the worst
time of night. Like, yeah, basically like sitting ducks. I mean,
yeah.
We're not very dark-looking people. So we stood out, you know, like Zoe's incredibly fair, you know? So like we're like two little moons in the night. Like,
yeah, just waiting just for this bus.
Sitting ducks, basically, that could have, you know, could have been robbed, could have been mugged, whatever. It didn't happen. So that's, you know, that's a credit to humanity. The bus arrived.
It was amazing when it did because it was so dark and it was just sort of this flood of light. It's like,
oh. Yeah, it did eventually arrive. And that's, you know, that happened to us a lot of times. Like, that's just one example of sort of being uncomfortable. Like, but I guess that's more about just feeling slightly unsafe more than anything else.
Getting used to somewhere different.
Getting used to somewhere different, which is, yeah, part of the, like, part of the joy of traveling, eh?
Mm.
So, yeah, we were certainly uncomfortable. But it's worth doing because, you know, we got to go to the next town and it was all totally worthwhile. Really cool way to travel.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And you come away with some interesting stories, I think, doing those uncomfortable things rather than going and staying in the Hilton somewhere.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Which would be nice, but...
Yeah. It would also be nice, yeah.
It wouldn't be quite as interesting, no. I don't think. Yeah. What's the next uncomfortable thing that you guys are going to do?
Probably going somewhere where we don't speak the language and having to do the project, I think, is definitely going to be it.
Yeah.
Sort of trying to navigate our way through that and find our feet and see if, like, maybe people won't respond to it as well as they have here, because we've had such an amazing response in Wellington. How is, like, people in Europe when we actually try to sell the prints, because we didn't try to sell them in Barcelona, how are people going to respond there?
Mm.
And going forward, especially, I think, as we go to sort of smaller places, that's going to be really different and unusual. And yeah, I think that's definitely an upcoming uncomfortable event that we're going to go through.
Yeah. And does that scare you or excite you or a little bit of both?
Well, I think it excites me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really exciting, actually. Like, I love Wellington a lot. It's where my family is. It's where I grew up and everything. But yeah, just the idea of going off traveling again and being in other places, like, you know, you sort of feel it, you sort of feel like a rush of excitement run through your body, you know, just, I mean, like, we're pretty simple people, and Zoe said before that we, even though we do travel, like, to lots of cool places, we're not actually that adventurous. We don't go somewhere and do skydiving or chuck ourselves off a building or anything like that. Like, for me, the exciting thing is, like, going somewhere, having a sleep in, and then, like, waking up and being like, oh, like, where am I going to get coffee?
Yeah.
You know, and, like, going down and, like, finding, like, a really cute little cafe, you know, and you have this, like, cool rapport with the dude behind the counter who doesn't speak your language, but you have a go at it, and, you know, just through, like, smiling and the basic vocabulary that you know, you get a coffee, and maybe it's not exactly what you ordered or whatever, and then you sit down, and just, like, being able to be in a new location and just doing the very simple things is really exciting.
What beer are you going to drink?
What beer are we going to drink? That's the fundamental question, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we like our comfort while being uncomfortable, if that makes any sense.
It does.
Finding comfort in the uncomfortable.
Awesome. Where can people follow your journey online?
Where can't they? they can follow it on Facebook, 31 Days In, Instagram, 31 Days In, Etsy, if you want to buy anything.
Yeah, Etsy's been amazing.
Yeah,
Etsy's so best. If anyone does want to buy a print, that's the best place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wellington one also had music, so that's all available for download on Bandcamp. And you can, like, follow links to all the 31 really awesome bands and musicians along there. So, yeah, and we just want to say again a massive shout out to those guys who selflessly contributed a track, and we have some amazing music. And these guys were all just like, when we told them that, you know, the funds were going to go to an organisation like Kibosh, they were just so cool about it. Like, Fraser Ross and everyone was just like immediately, like, yeah, cool. Yep. We'd love to contribute a song. So we want to say again thanks to them and all the music's on Bandcamp.
Hmm.
And where else?
I think that's it. They can also email us at 31daysin@gmail.com.
Yeah.
But we're probably looking at sort of doing more video stuff when we go forward. So probably look out for a YouTube account and maybe a Snapchat.
Awesome.
Maybe. Is Snapchat going to come and go, though?
No.
Everyone has a Snapchat now.
Snapchat's the best. Have you used those?
I don't have a Snapchat.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's here to stay.
Yeah. Really? It's definitely
it's
here
not,
to stay.
It's not a passing fad?
I don't think so.
How can people, like, I mean, how long is 7 seconds of someone going, you know, duck face going to be
appealing? But it's not just...
Yeah, there's probably more to it than just duck face. So
all right, I'm looking at it.
There's more legitimate content on there.
Okay, okay. Yeah. I'll have to look into it more. Okay.
Awesome. I'll put in some links to where people can find you into the show notes as well. And if you guys have started your Snapchat or YouTube channel, I'll post that out to the listeners too. Now, before we wrap up, do you have any advice or guidance or interesting facts for the listeners?
I always go with pack more undies than you think you need because you don't always have access to a washing machine. That's mine.
Can't top that. I think that's as good as it
is. I think we leave it there, actually. Thanks heaps, guys, for coming along and having a chat. It's been awesome.
Thanks so much for having us. It was a pleasure.